Everyone asks, another than Avihu, what was going on? Okay, now nobody remembers that it just happened in Parsha Shmini, because Parsha Shmini is right after Pesach. Nobody's really paying attention to that Parsha, so it gets relegated to the beginning of Achremos. Achremos Shnei B'nei Aron, and that's where people really get into it. But I guess that's more yeshiva. It should make some more sense. This month started by now, so then worked so well. Now, they were punished. And there's a bunch of different opinions. One of the opinions is that they were shtuyei yayin, that they had drunk wine before they went inside the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Another opinion is that they never got married, or that they never had children. Maybe it's a combination between the two. Another opinion is that they were morei halacha b'fnei rabbim, that they passed into halacha in front of the Rebbe, in front of Moshe Rabbeinu. Or they wondered out loud when they were going to be put in charge, when Moshe and Aaron were going to die, and they were going to be put in charge. Absolutely amazing. Amazing pshatim. In Nadav and Avihu. Absolutely amazing pshatim. Now you'd assume that that means that Nadav and Avihu are tremendous rishayim. Evil people who just did tremendously terrible things. But it seemed to all stem from something different. When they were at Har Sinai, along with all the other people that were there, Moshe Rabbeinu was up on top, obviously. Behind him was Aaron. Then came the Bnei Aaron, which should have been Nadav and Avihu, maybe not even Elazar and Itamar, and the Zekanim. Were somewhat near the foot of the mountain, the closest ones to the mountain itself, and then surrounding was Bnei Yisrael. That's what it was supposed to be, so you have all those people going up the mountain all the way through. There were mistako b'fnei Shechina, says the Gemara, that they looked up and they saw the Ziv HaShechina that was on top of Har Sinai, and they were nene from it, they benefited from it, by yochlu v'yishtu, that they ate and they drank, so to speak, while they were sitting in the bottom of the mountain. They took in the splendor of the Shechina, and all they thought from that point on is, when will we get to see that again? When will we see that again? Now, at that moment, they were chayiv to die. They were supposed to die at Har Sinai. Right there, while the Torah was given, they should have died right then, along with the Zekanim, the Shivim Zekanim. But they didn't. HaKadosh Baruch Hu pushed it off and waited for something else to happen. And then when something else happened, like by the Mishkan on Rosh Chodesh Nisan, when it was the eighth day of the Miluim, and Aaron is being put in charge at the Kohen Gadol, at that moment, that's when they ended up dying. But there has to be a connection. There's got to be something here, and there's a famous Kli Yakar that adds together all eight answers, puts them all together, and makes the whole cheshbon out of it. But there has to be a common denominator that each one of these answers is dealing with, in which Nadav and Avihu were different from everyone else, and Chazal are trying to teach us something just through different means. Through different means, giving different answers, but it's all boils down to one issue. What did Nadav and Avihu do wrong? Now don't say to yourself that Nadav and Avihu were just some people. They were rishayim, they had done something wrong. That's not Nadav and Avihu may have been. Let's think. Moshe Rabbeinu does not waste words. After they died, he went up to Aaron, says Rashi, and he said to Aaron, I thought that the Mishkan required a death of a great gadol, and I thought it was Obi or Bechol. It was either me or you, said Moshe to Aaron. It was either me or you was going to have to die in the first day in order to show the greatness of the honor of the Mishkan. That's what I thought. Turns out that they, Nadav and Avihu, who died on this day, are greater than both of us. It's not just stump words that Moshe Rabbeinu was trying to make Aaron feel a little bit better that his sons had just passed away. That's not what Moshe Rabbeinu was doing. He meant it. Nadav and Avihu were tremendous tzaddikim, great tzaddikim. So what was he telling Aaron? And what does that mean that they were greater tzaddikim? What does that mean that they were greater than him and Aaron? So I was looking at an old shmooze from 4.5 years ago, and it's funny. It was this parsha after Pesach that I had spoken about it, and I spoke about baseball cards. That I was really into baseball cards at one point in my life. It was about half a year ago, and I loved collecting them and selling them and buying whatever, everything. I can't imagine how much money I must have spent on baseball cards. I cannot imagine at all what I put into it. And I still remember, I remembered how much it was, and I still have a little thing of basketball cards I think I have left that are like my most expensive and whatever it was, and I have them with a little rubber band, with the crease thing so they don't like bend or anything. I'm waiting for my kids. Hopefully it'll marry off one of my kids, but we'll see. We'll see what ends up happening. We'll see if it works. If it's worth that way. But I did get so recently. It was recently at the time. So it was 4 or 5 years ago. My grandmother came over, my wife's grandmother, and she came over and brought a package that she had found in her basement of 1990 Donruss. 1990 Donruss. If anybody remembers the different packs of cards. She said, you want the pack of Donruss? I'm like, oh, yeah. So I gave them to my kids, and I was like, whatever. And my kids open up the package. And, of course, what's in there? So think, who was a rookie in 1989 that would have been in a 1990 Donruss pack? 1989. So far back. No, Mark McGuire is 1986, actually. Mark Plum is 1985. Dominique Wilkins played basketball. That's close. That is close. It was a tremendous guess. A good guy who actually did not win Rookie of the Year that year. His name is Ken Griffey Jr. Ken Griffey Jr. was in that package. And I sat there and he got, my kids pulled out and they're like, oh, Ken Griffey Jr. They knew who Ken Griffey Jr. was. I think at the time he was playing for the White Sox. It was right before he retired. He said, oh, it's Ken Griffey Jr. Ken Griffey Jr. is in our pack. And I'm sitting there and I have dollar signs in my eyes. All I'm thinking of is how much I remember buying Ken Griffey Jr. rookie cards for. And I was sitting there like, a Ken Griffey Jr. rookie from 1990? What are you kidding me? In this random Donruss pack? I'm like already thinking like how I'm going to add an addition to my house. And how I'm gonna go buy like Mr. Rothner's house. I'm going to buy a whole business now. I'm going to like own Israel. I'm like already thinking. Like everything that I'm going to do with this, and I'm sitting there, and I'm like, okay, I got to check this out. And I went online, and this is before the Asifa, so there was still such a thing as the internet in the house. So I went online, and I checked up Ken Griffey Jr. Donruss 1990, and I'm sitting there, and you know what it came out to? 75 cents. 75 cents was the price of a Ken Griffey Jr. rookie Donruss card. And I sat there afterward, and for the next day, I was down. I was out. I could not get over it. Every time I thought about something, I was just like, oh man, I can't believe it. And like I said, every time I looked at the Ken Griffey, I was like, I hate you. That's it. I was like an absolute hatred for everything that it stood for. I was unbelievably disappointed. It's amazing. Before I got the card, I was fine. I'm as happy as I usually am, and everything was all good. I get the card, and I think it's awesome, and then I found out about it. All of a sudden, I'm in a deep funk. I'm in this depression that I've never been in before. For what? 5 minutes ago, I had nothing. There was nothing wrong. And all of a sudden, I'm so upset over nothing. Over nothing. I didn't gain. I didn't lose. And it was nothing. In fact, I gained 75 cents. You can get a Coke here for that. That's great. I mean, you'd think that there'd be something good. But that's it. I mean, what's the problem? Sometimes, a gift from a Kaddish Baruch Hu, or what seemingly is a gift from a Kaddish Baruch Hu, can really be a type of onesh. I still remember vividly when my brother Anan bought for my brother Rafi a fake lottery ticket. It was a fake one with everything, and you know, you scratch off and whatever it was, right? And you automatically win. You win something like $25,000 or $50,000, right? And he bought it for me. And the reason why is because one time Rafi bought one for Anan and made fun of him for it. So Anan said, I owe him one. So he went and he bought it. He bought this whole thing and he gave it to Rafi. And he's like, oh, by the way, here, this. It was on a Sunday night dinner. And he's like, oh, here's the lottery. You know, you bought me, so I'm going to buy you one. So Rafi's like, I really would have wanted the dollar. So he's like, all right, whatever. So Rafi, of course, we're all watching because everybody's in on it, right? And Rafi, like, goes and he, like, undoes it and he, like, sees and gets one. And he's like, you see his, like, face change and, like, all of a sudden he's like, oh! Oh my gosh, I won! Oh my gosh, I won! He's like screaming out loud. He's the happiest man in the world. He's going crazy, right? My dad goes up to it and he's like, let me see it for a second. He looks at it and he's like, ah, this is junk, and tears it in half. And Rocky's like, what are you doing? And he's screaming, right? And then all of a sudden, like all of us, like I don't know who it was, like me, Uri, Renan, whatever, we're all looking, and we're like, it was a fake Rafi. And he just looks at it, and he looks at Renan, and Renan's like, oh my God. Renan ran outside, no shoes on, ran down the block, and Rafi goes chasing after him, goes first to get a knife, and then he goes running down the block to go chase after him to be able to make sure. I mean, I still remember it. And he came back. There was no, if Rafi wouldn't have had that in his hands, he wouldn't have had any problem afterwards. He wouldn't have remembered it. Don't remind him of this now. Because I'm sure he's ready to still kill Renan. But I still remember it. It's that these things, in a way, can be like an onesh. It can be a very, very big onesh. I still remember, maybe Rabbi Shimon remembers this. Do you remember my car my senior year in high school? Yes, the French one. It's a Renault, okay, that didn't have a speedometer. Awesome car. So remember, do you remember Dr. Stein?
Of course.
Dr. Stein, right? So Dr. Stein saw my car one day, and he's like, whose car is it outside? There were no outsiders. Like, it's my car, right? So he said, that car is for sure worth something. It's like from the 70s. It was a 70s car. It was a 1997. It was a 70s or like early 80s Renault, which was a French car. Nobody had ever seen it before. It didn't have anything in it. It literally did not have a speedometer in it. It was a crazy little car. He's like, it's for sure worth something. I'm checking it up tonight. And I was like, all happy. He comes back the next day. He's like, it's not even worth the metal. It was worth less than $200. Like, that was the price, the total price of my car. It was like, these things, you don't even realize, but, like, that sense of, like, oh, my gosh, it can be, and then it's just gone. And it's absolutely gone, and there's nothing there. You ever notice yourself looking into the future and trying to think about what could be if I do this, and all of a sudden you wake up and you're just like, all right, it's not going to happen, it's not there, right? There's a purpose to that. It's not just there to be a tremendous onus and for you to have that like feeling of like regret or forgetfulness or anything like that. It's not there. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has that ability for you, your ability to look into the future and to think about that, and it's made for a very, very good reason. Because there's a possibility to get a lesson out of this. There's a way of making everything in life, even bad things, become good. And the way of doing that is look into the future of everything. And I'm using it the opposite way. I was showing you examples where it could be like an onus, where the good can be made into something bad and it can upset you, where you're looking at something new and then you're just let down. You can use this in an extremely good way to consider what's going to be, to make a cheshbon and nefesh, to bring yourself to a level where you can look at the olam ha'emes and imagine what would be if I'm going to olam haba tomorrow, what would be right now with what I have. Nadav Avihu lived in that world. Nadav Avihu lived in a world that was olam haba. They weren't here, they weren't with us. When they saw the Shekhinah at Har Sinai, all their desire was to get up there and be with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They didn't care what they had to do. Their whole world was about living in the future, was about living in Olam Haba. And they had to get there no matter what. They couldn't marry, because that would take them away from the ultimate Kiddusha of getting yourself close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We know that it's the opposite, that a marriage can bring you Kiddusha and can make you even higher, can make you grow in your Avodas Hashem. But Nadav Avihu looked at it and said, no! We don't want to waste a second in this world. We want to be just up there as soon as we possibly can. Why should we get married? They were constantly shtuye yayin. They were drunk with this idea, with this thing in their head, where they couldn't think of anything else. There was nothing else inside their head except to constantly be with HaKadosh Baruch Hu and to desire to be with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's what they did. Everything they did was with Kavod Shamayim in their own heads. What would cause more Kavod Shamayim? If more Kavod Shamayim was to paskin halacha in front of Moshe Rabbeinu because he didn't say it out loud yet, paskin that halacha and cause the Kavod Shamayim. If it's better for me and Nadav and Avihu to be in charge of Klal Yisrael rather than Moshe and Aaron because they were greater, then that's what you need. So when will Moshe and Aaron die? So we'll be in charge. If that's what Kavod Shamayim is, if that's what would bring them to Olam Haba quicker, if that would bring them to the ultimate level, then whatever you need to do, you need to do. So Mida Keneged Mida. They wanted to be in Olam Haba. They wanted to get close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu as close as you possibly can. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, grab them and said, come with me. And they were right in a way. They were greater. There were things that were greater about Nadav and Avihu that Moshe and Aaron did not have. Especially because they were together. There wasn't achdus between them that was tremendous. Their neshamas were tremendous. But there's something a little bit different behind it. Now I want to take you to something as controversial as you can possibly get. And it happens to be this day. Medinas or Medinat Eretz Yisrael. Depending on how you want to look at it. Okay, we're going to bring it to this day and we're going to try to understand. There are some interesting ma'asim behind the whole phenomenon of how it came into being and what happened and where it was. To be honest with you, if you look at the tshuvas of Rav Avadia Yosef, it seems very, very clear that many Gedolim from both sides accepted Yom HaTzmud as some type of a day, even though it was during Sphira, as something. Rosh Shlomo Zalman Orbach at the forefront. But there's clearly something that happened in Klal Yisrael, and it really boils down to one big issue. Is Eretz Yisrael right now the Aschalta de Geula or not? And that right there is a massive machlokas. Is it the beginning of the future redemption with Mashiach, or is it not? Some people take it to the extreme. The Satmar Rebbe, for example, held that it was Ma'akev Megula. Other people take it to the other extreme. The Rav Kuknicks, for example, hold that it's Mamish, the Askalta de Geula, and they bring Rayas, that Mashiach ben Yosef is Ki'ilu, he's here already. And Chas V'Shalom, for a person like me, to put my head in between such great mountains. You can't put yourself inside there. It's just... are too big. That's absolutely huge. But you can say something here that can apply in all ways, all shapes, all forms, to be able to apply it in some way. Everybody hopes that Eretz Yisrael will be ours after Mashiach. And everybody hopes that right now we're going to have it straight until Mashiach. That from this moment on, there won't be any hiccups. There won't be any time where the Arabs, Chas V'Shalom, will take over. There won't be any destruction in Eretz Yisrael. That the worst that has happened, and that there should be nothing else. That everything that happened to Sderot should stop. That everything that's happening up by the north, by Lebanon, should stop. That anything that's happened up until this point, that everything should stop. Everybody hopes that the land will remain ours without any breaks until Mashiach comes. That's what we hope. That what we have now is that nothing bad will happen. We don't want any Jews to die. We don't want a single person to lose their life. We don't want anything like that. That we really look forward to. We really want the world to be a place where it's Olam Haba. We're looking at a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Tchias Mason comes back, and that's not a bunch of zombies coming out of the ground and starting going, but real people coming out of the ground in full bodies, babies growing up in 1 second, seemingly according to Derech Hashem, coming out and telling us, and coming along, a geula with Mashiach ben Yosef, Mashiach ben David. And although we see many flaws within the system that might be there, or anything like it, on both sides, on every side, there are flaws in the systems that we have. We can beg on a day like today, especially during a day like Sfira, especially on a day after Bahab, that everything can eventually become great. Now, what is entitled within that? Does that include saying Hallel, not saying Tachna, whatever it is? Listen, to each their own. I'm not going to tell you guys what to do. I'm not going to be poskening. I'm not going to posken for you because I'm not a posek. And each person, thank God, we come from a eclectic, I guess you can call it an eclectic amount of different yeshivas, although I really mean that from very diverse backgrounds, each one of us. And everybody comes from a different place, and everybody does their own thing when it comes to something like this. And to me, maybe this is a problem on my part, I don't see an issue with that. I find it amazing that people from completely different backgrounds and stuff like this can get together, and some people will be saying Hallel, and some people are saying Tachman. It was much worse when there was Bahab on this day, and we were doing Bahab and Hallel. That was a lot weirder and a lot stranger. That I'll definitely tell you. So the Nidche, although it is Nidche, right, does make it makes it a lot easier. But I understand it. The key is to be sensitive to other people when you start talking about these types of things. Because when you go up to somebody and you demand that what you're saying is correct, you may have unbelievable sources. You may have unbelievable reasons. You may be right. That's possible. That halakhically you might be correct. But it doesn't matter. Because this is an emotional issue. This is no longer a halakhic issue. It might have been at some point, but it isn't anymore. People are arguing emotionally. People are arguing with their hearts and not with their brains most of the time. And it gets too much. People are just not thinking the same way. Iyar, Chodesh Iyar, was always the month where Mashiach was going to be announced. There was going to be a hakraza. There was going to be an announcement during Iyar that Mashiach will be announced. The saddest day are supposed to become Chagim. If you look toward Olam Haba, Sfira will thus become days not of Avelos, but days of Simcha. That these days will not just be 33 days where you're not able to cut your hair, where you're not able to shave, where you're not able to listen to music, where you're not able to, etc. That's not what these days are. These days are going to be Yimei Simcha. They're going to be unbelievable days of Simcha. And that's really what we're looking at. This day, whether you're appreciating everything that has happened for us or not, for whatever reason, whether you're appreciating a different thing that a Kadosh Baruch Hu gave to us on this type of a day, regardless, there is an amazing chance that you have to daven and to pray on a day like today that every day should be besimcha during these types of days. For every day to be something unbelievable. That's the idea. Who knows? I'll be honest. It struck me a lot, the Boston Marathon. You know, my wife finished her last marathon, although I'm not allowing her to do a marathon anymore, not because of yesterday, but she finished her last marathon in 4 hours and 15 minutes. About that. 4 hours, 10 minutes, 4 hours, 15 minutes. The bomb went off at 4 minutes and 9 and a half. 4 hours and 9 and a half minutes. So my wife isn't going to do the Boston Marathon anytime soon. She likes running, but she doesn't do it for whatever. That would have been about the time that my wife was crossing the finish line. Would she have been affected? It's not... doesn't matter. That's baklanish. But that affected me a little bit. To hear about something like, these people are everywhere. These crazy, nutty people are absolutely everywhere. And you have to live your life normally. It's what we said when we were in Eretz Yisrael in the middle of the Intifada. And it's true now also. You have to live your life normally. There's always going to be a fear there. There's always going to be something there. But you never know. You never know. You never want to... I mean, lives were lost. People were maimed. People that were unbelievable athletes lost their legs and have no ability to walk, let alone run, ever again. And it's an unbelievably sad thing. But we have to look at something like that as a progenitor for the future. There's nothing else we can do with this. To look at that and say, so now what? So now what are we going to do? Is it all about setting up more security for the next marathon? It's not about that. Is it about every sports stadium better have better security all around there? It's a nice thing to have, but it's never going to stop someone who really wants to set up a bomb, will it? I mean, if somebody is smart enough to be able to set something off, something's going to happen. But it's a haskala to what can be in the future. Imagine, you had no idea what was the harbinger of Mashiach and what caused Mashiach to come. But it was just one domino effect. And that major domino, the one at the very, very end, the one at the very, very end that caused Mashiach to all of a sudden just pop in, was a thing that you thought to be the absolute worst thing possible, where you sat there and you said, why would God do this to you? Why could that, how could that possibly be? And that's it. And that's what brings him, and that's what allows Mashiach to come. Appreciating everything, looking toward the future, and understanding you still got to make a bracha of Baruch Dayana Emes. And I hope people made that bracha after hearing what happened in the marathon yesterday. I hope you said it for anybody that might have passed away. There were enough Jews that were running that marathon. I don't know if any of them were hurt or killed, but there were enough Jews running that marathon that you should have said Baruch Dayana Emes, and you should have said that this is such a crazy thing, but an eye toward the future. Another eye toward the future and thinking, how can we use this as another means to get ourselves closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to make ourselves come to chakras a little bit earlier, to make ourselves learn a little bit more during Seder, and to make ourselves a little bit more appreciative of everything that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave to us. If we do that well, then we can understand what we can do on a day like today. And then you can use Sphira in the proper way, the way it was supposed to be used, as a velus toward the future, to know what's going to be, to eventually build your way up to Lag BaOmer. We'll stop it there, guys.